Accession number 26844, Reel 1.
Mr. John Blake, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Blake?
I was born at 106 Mildmay Park Road. That's Newington Green in the borough of Islington.
On
the 13th of September, 1922.
And could you tell us a bit about your family and your very early years? Family first.
I was born in Mildmay Park Road, and my father was a pipe fitter or engineer at the British Drug Houses in Islington, and travelled up there every morning. And mother was a machinist, although when my brother arrived in 1921, she packed up working and sort of decided she'd have more of a family. And then I was born, as I say, in the September, and Dad carried on working. When I was three...
Hang on a bit. Was it a comfortable upbringing? I mean, your dad was in steady employment.
Oh, yeah.
So a reasonable house?
So we had had two rooms in the basement of a house, not very plush, and one toilet in the house for, I think there was two families above. But we had quite a nice upbringing. I mean, I can't, weren't ill-treated or something, and mum and dad were sort of honest people and tried to give us a good life. I went to school when I was three, and my first memories of school was arriving home one day with a red cross on my forehead. And when I got home, mum wasn't very happy and asked me what it was for. And of course, being the sort of lad I was, I said I didn't know, because I didn't think I could do anything wrong. But she went back to school, and I don't really know what happened, but I know the teacher apologised after that for putting, she said she was out of order putting this red cross on my...
What was it meant to mean?
Because I'd misbehaved.
How did you do at school?
Well, yeah, I've done quite well, really. But I was there till I think I was about five or six. And then Dad wanted to move a bit nearer to his work. So we moved up to Preben Street in Islington, and just had two rooms and a scullery and a toilet downstairs. This was above a shop. And there were people... two families lived above us. So Dad went off to work at the British Drug Houses, and Mum stayed at home to look after us. And then we'd been there it's about 3 years, and Mum had another son, Brother Ron. He's 5 years younger than I am. 5 years older than I am. And then in 1930s, Dad developed tuberculosis, which was thought to be attributed to his life in the trenches during the First World War. And in 1931, at the age of 32, he died of TB in the Whittington Hospital at Highgate. That meant that I can remember going to the funeral, which was four horses and a hearse and two carriages, all horse drawn, and up to Finchley Cemetery, and standing around the grave. And my brother looked over the grave, and his hat fell in the grave. And it's strange, these things you remember, isn't it, really? And we came home, and after a short time, Mum had to go off to work then to keep us, because there wasn't any great deal of big benefits. Oh, and then I think she just got 10 shillings for a widow's pension. We lived very poorly then. I mean, very often had boiled rice and jam on it for our food. And
so, what about your school?
I went to
you changed school when you moved there.
Oh yeah, I went to Queen's Head Street School.
And how did you do at school?
Oh, quite well, thank you. I did pass a trade scholarship when I was... I did pass a trade scholarship when I was 13 and wanted to go into motor bodybuilding for whatever reason. And we went to Regent's Street Polytechnic, where I was hoping to become a pupil there. But unfortunately, they were full, and they wanted me to go to Dagenham, Falls at Dagenham, but Mum didn't have enough money to send me, so I just had to turn the opportunity down, which I was a bit disappointed by. I was offered a place at the Holloway Road Polytechnic for building, but an uncle who was a builder told me it was a pretty poor trade to be in, or told me Mum. And so I didn't go there. I just carried on with Queen's Head Street School. When I left
school, you did all right at school, then.
I got good reports. Always got good reports from school. Yeah, and I was quite good at drawing and geometry, but because mental arithmetic, was taught quite a lot to us, and because we didn't have these computers then, did we? I done quite well at school. Yeah.
And what about sport? Were you interested in sport?
Yeah, I played football and cricket for the school team. I wasn't a great player of things, but I was a reserve, and I played quite a few games for them.
And did you play outside of school? You know, I mean, any games or sports?
Table tennis, and I joined the boys' brigade.
Tell us about your boys. What was it? Because boys' brigade, some of them were quite military. What did you do with your boys' brigade?
I think I played the triangle in the band. I think that's what I done. But it was just marching and attending parades and things. You know, that we played. Yeah, we played indoor games like table tennis. I think we played some badminton as well.
Did you have a uniform with the boys' brigade?
Oh, we just had a strap across our chest, a belt, and a pillbox hat with the numbers 58 on the front.
And what was the drill? Very military, or
I suppose a very mild military though.
And what about camp? Did you go away to camp?
No, I never ever went to camp. I think I didn't go because my mum couldn't afford it, and whereas we did go to, when we was at school, we did go up to Children's Country Holiday Fund, which was about a shilling a week because my mum was widowed, so she didn't pay very much, and we went down to Gloucestershire for 3 or 4 years, for a week or one or 2 weeks.
What, the whole family?
No, just me and my brother, my older brother.
And this was organised by who?
The Children's Country Holiday Fund.
And what were those holidays like?
Well, we just stayed at people's houses, and they were very good. I mean, we used to go and pinch all the apples and plums out the orchards, which we never had in Islington. And they were most enjoyable, really. And my memory is also of buying some cigarettes for one of the relatives, 5 Woodbines, but boys being boys, we smoked them on the way home, on the train.
did they make you, they made you welcome, the people?
Oh, here? Yeah, very welcome, yeah, they looked after us, yeah, very welcome.
And what about the local kids, were they friendly?
They were excellent, I couldn't fault them at all.
Did you go to the same place every time, or different places?
We went to... at the same area, stayed with a Mrs. Thomas twice and a Mrs. Beard once. I can't think who the other lady was we stayed with, but we went about 4. And, you know, Mrs. Thomas, we visited after we left school, you know, and was at work. We went back to see her and her husband, etc.
So you'd leave school at 14?
14,
that'd
yeah.
be 1936?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And what were you to do then? What did you go into?
I went into, started work at Delarue's in Bun Hill Row, in their pen department. And my job, they made a note of the pen. And mainly my job then was I was upstairs in the repair place where they used to repair the pens. And if anybody came into the showroom, I used to have to go down and pick the pen and take it up there, and that was mainly my job, just running back and forward with pens. But after about 8 months, I got a job in, they asked me to work in the showroom, which was a bit of a step up, although I know Mum said, well, we don't know what we're going to do about your clothes because you'll have to dress a bit smarter. But anyway, I got by for a little while, and running the showroom was an Australian couple who wanted me to go back to Australia with them, but Mum wasn't very keen on that, so I didn't do that. But soon after that, they went back to Australia, and the new people who came in, I wasn't very happy with, so I left there and got a job at a French polishing, a furniture manufacturer in Penton Street, Islington. And I was a tea boy there, and we used to go out and get, you know, 3 slices of bread and dripping for 2 tuppence, and bacon sandwiches and cheese rolls, and then they used to ask us to go and get cigarettes as well. Well, the cigarettes that Woodbine say were 10 for 4 pence in the local newsagent. But if we ran, say, a quarter of a mile to Mick Gold's in the Chapel Street Market, we could get them from 3 pence halfpenny. So that's what we used to do. We used to run into the cafe and order what we wanted, then run like mad down to Chapel Market, into Mick Gold's, and buy our cigarettes, and then come back, pick up. And of course, the French, I was in the French polishing department, and of course, they always said, you've been to so-and-so Mick Gold's and bought these cigarettes, because they're stale, but I don't think they ever knew, really. But, yeah, and then I don't know what happened there, really, but I think I must have got a bit fed up with it. And then people had us where we lived in Popham Street. By then, we was living in Popham Street. And
still Islington?
Yeah, still in Islington, yeah, in some Albany cottages in Popham Street. And there at the top of the street was people who had a greengrocer stall, the Holloways. And Mum was talking to them one day, and the son of Holloway said to me, oh, he said, we want somebody, he said, at our firm. He said, why didn't you come up and see the boss? So I went up to see the boss and got the job. And that was at Bent, the Gallatly, Moore and Thine, they were called, and they made electric clocks. Well, I really loved that job. I was working a press and doing turning on the lathe, and yeah, I really liked the job. And then we were taken over by another company called Bentheimer Clock Company, who came from Perivale. And we, after a few months, they wanted us to go or move to Perivale, but Mum said no, we couldn't afford it on what we was paying, but I couldn't get any more wages. So then an uncle of mine had started up the aunt actually became my aunt, started up a wholesale confectionery tobacco company in Islington again. And so they said, well, why don't you come and work for us? So I went and worked for them. And mainly working in there, it was like a shop and warehouse in Barnsley Street, Islington. And I used to work in the warehouse, and then had one of these bikes with a carrier tray on the front of them. Very difficult to drive ride at first, because as you turn, you know, the trays went straight on. But and they used to load that up, and I used to just deliver to the shops until I was 17. And then I passed my driving test. And
so tell me a bit about your work as a van driver, you know, a delivery van driver, weren't you?
Yeah.
Where were you working?
Well, we were mainly delivering, or I was mainly, this was a little 1,000-weight Morris van, and mainly delivering in North and some of East London, delivering cigarettes and confectionery. Also then, used to collect a lot of money, because mainly our business was done on a COD basis.
Cash and delivery.
Yeah, so I used to collect quite a lot of money as well. And one day I was in Bethnal Green and stopped to have a meal because at a cafe that I knew there, and they got to know me, because in them days you couldn't always get a meal at a cafe. So you sort of try to establish some relationship as a customer. And so, but I went in there, it's parked around the corner from Bethnal Green Road, went in, had my meal, came out, and my van had been stolen. There wasn't a terrible lot of stuff on it, you know, confectionery and tobacco, but nevertheless, it made the van was then fitted with sort of immobilizers and extra locks on the doors. But today, of course, there's much more security on the vehicles.
Now, what about the outbreak, the approach and the outbreak of war?
So I'd done that till, I was doing that when, see, September 39 was when I passed the test, and the war had broken out, I think, by then.
Now, to tell me about the outbreak of war. Did you hear the broadcast?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So, well, it was full of excitement because there was so much going on that we was going to have this war, which somehow, I suppose, in our boys' way, we thought was going to be great adventures and all sorts of other things. And I was sitting at home with my mum and my brother, and Chamberlain came on and said that, a state of war next to us and Germany. I went downstairs and met my three friends who were down there already, and that we thought this was good, you know, this was something great. We were going to be soldiers.
Now, what did your mum think? Because your mum, your dad had died of tuberculosis, probably from the gas or whatever from the First World War. What did she think?
Well, she wasn't very happy about it because I suppose remembering my dad had died through the last war and probably thought, you know, am I going to miss a son now or whatever, you know. But anyway, I think she stood up to it pretty well, really.
How did the war affect your job? Because you were selling confectionery and, confectionery and things. But they went on ration pretty quickly, didn't they?
So they went on coupons then, on points. But we still done quite a lot of business. I mean, we were quite a good company and I think well respected. And we carried on. Okay, because the problem was that you'd have some 20 boxes on for a shop, and when you got there, the shop had gone. And you could be constantly hearing the sirens, and there wasn't much you could do, really, I suppose. It wasn't as though you could dive into a shelter or that, because you didn't particularly want to leave the van, for one, and two, you didn't know where the shelters were. And sometimes, if there was a raid on, you'd pull up outside the shop, and they'd close the shop and gone to the shelter, so you just had to wait outside. And so sometimes, you know, it was a pretty old long day, you know.
Were you badly affected by the roads being sort of covered in debris or blown up or whatever?
We were affected. I was affected by the roads being blown up and damaged, but not desperately affected. You know, it was no great sweat because there was always some other way to get there. I mean, I had a good knowledge of London, and there was always some way that I could find another way round to go. But it was an exciting job in lots of ways because you never quite knew what was in front of you. And of course, at night I was a fire watcher.
Now tell me about that.
Well, the fire watchers were people who issued with very silly little funny helmets. I don't really know what they did. And the idea was that round where we lived there was various buckets of water, of which we had a stirrup pump, which was a pump that you, much the same as some car pumps where the piston goes up and down, just push it up and down and it squirts water. It's a squirt water and then you fire. And also sandbags that we were supposed to throw onto the incendiary bombs. And that was a job that, and we had a little reinforced flat on the ground floor that we all used to congregate in. And Mr. Beach, he was the leader of our little gang, and his wife used to supply us with cheese and beetroot sandwiches every night. I don't quite know how she managed the cheese bit because that was always on ration, but it was quite a time. And I suppose in some respects, when I look back on it, it was quite enjoyable, really, because we was always having a laugh and a joke. And then one night I kicked one of the incendiaries open, went to kick it over the balcony, it stuck to my foot and lost my shoes. And my mum wasn't very happy about that, because, that same money wasn't very plentiful even in them days.
Now, was this part of the ARP organisation?
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. Oh, yeah, part of the ARP.
We were
fire watchers, yeah, known as fire watchers.
And do you remember any particular excitements, or how would you deal with an incendiary, you know?
Well, you were supposed to, I said, you're supposed to throw a sack of sandbag on it, or, and if there was any fire around it, to use a stirrup pump and a bucket of water. But, you know, these things were coming down in such profusion at times that you didn't know which way to go. And fortunately, you know, in where I lived, there was one or two flats were burnt out and that. But fortunately, in our particular area, because I remember I'm talking about an area of perhaps 100 yards or 150 yards by 150 yards, you know, that sort of area. So, you know, there was a lot coming down, but I don't know, we used to somehow, you know, we'd done a good job, I think, then.
And yeah, did you actually put out incendiaries yourself?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, threw sandbags on them. Nothing very right about it, just picked up a sandbag, was carrying it because they were quite heavy, running and then just dumped it on the incendiary.
Now, what about the various air raid precautions? Did you have a shelter, either an Anderson or any other kind of shelter, at your house?
No,
or
we lived in flats, and in the centre of the flats, what we used to call the square, there was brick buildings with reinforced roofs on them, reinforced concrete roofs on them, flat roofs. They were a bit of a bad thing, really, because there was pitch on top of them to make them waterproof, and if incendiaries followed them, of course the pitch started to catch fire. But my mum used them for a little while, but after that she used to go down to Essex Road tube station. She felt
hang on, what about this aerator, what was it like inside it? Did you ever go inside it? I mean, what was it like, the atmosphere in there?
Well, it was only a small area of about 8 by 8, I suppose, 8 feet by 8 feet. Several of these, you know, it wasn't one big area, just an area split up in about eight by eights, and very damp and cold, very miserable, no lights in there, no, not very nice at all.
Anywhere people, to sit, you know?
Well, people used to take seats down there into it and blankets, and but it wasn't very nice at all, really.
Now, what was it like down at Essex Road tube station?
Yeah, it was good because a lot of people got peace of mind being down there. Because, you know, when these air raids are going on every night, it does get a bit wearying. And at times, of course, the air raid time and going, you didn't get any raids. But this all added attention. But Mum liked it down there and she met people.
Now, did you ever go to this tube station? I mean, what was the atmosphere like in the tube station?
I went down there just once. Very crowded, claustrophobic, very warm and smelly, I suppose, really, with people's bodies. But very, very happy. Everybody was very happy and cheerful. There wasn't no gloom down there because they felt they was away from all the bombs. In fact, they only wanted one to go down the lift shaft and there'd have been an awful lot of casualties there. But I think spiritually, people felt very well. You know, they felt very good down there. You can be wounded mentally and wounded physically, but they felt very secure mentally anyway down there.
Now, what about the blackout? Two sides to this. One, how did you black out your flat? And second, how did it affect driving, you know, with no lights or signs or anything? Well, it's taking your flat first.
Yeah, well, the flat, you all, being a fire watcher, I had to make sure that around my, on the same balcony as the flats, that everybody, or nobody was showing any lights, because everybody was very, very fussy about this, no lights, because we was sort of made to believe somehow that if some Hitler saw a light, that they were going to drop a bomb on your house, you know. But no, people were very keen on, and we used to have blackout curtains and all sorts of things. You wouldn't turn the light on if you came in. You wouldn't turn the lights on until you made sure the blinds were drawn. And no, that was quite quite a concern, really, the blackout.
And what about the effect outside when you were driving or getting about?
Well, because we had these masked headlights. And, Yeah, once you got used to them, I suppose that was all right, you know, because in them days there wasn't a great deal of traffic on the road. I mean, you know, there was, today, well, it would be pretty awful, but there wasn't a terrible lot of traffic. I did have one thing that happened to me. I was coming down the Harrow Road one night about 7 o'clock and somebody walked into the side of the van. He'd come out the pub and the police said that they thought he was drunk and just walked in the side. That was a bit upsetting, but nevertheless, it's...
Was he hurt or killed?
Oh, he broke a leg. Yeah, he broke his fibula and his tibula. But he tried to, you know, say it was my fault, but the police went along and said, no, he was drunk. And yeah, happy days.
Now, what about rationing? What about food rationing first? How did it affect your life?
Well, you certainly couldn't have what you wanted. You just had to accept what you could get. And, of course, mums being what they are, of course, would most surely go without to make sure their children were getting enough food. And mum seemed to think that we were sort of always very hungry. I don't know how she done the food, but she sort of buy the cheapest things of everything that was off ration and made plenty of dumplings and puddings and things like that, you know, you could get flour and stuff. But I suppose, yeah, no, we done all right, really, I suppose, you know.
Did the clothing rationing affect you much?
That was very difficult, the clothing, yeah, because what you had, I suppose, you worked in, and you played in, because we just didn't have many changes of clothing, you know. I don't know whether I had one suit, or I might have just had trousers, but we never had much clothing at all, really.
Now, anything? Do you remember any incidents from the Blitz? I mean, were you any bombs particularly that you remember, or any nights of bombing?
Well, one of the worst nights was when a friend of mine, Bill Warren, who's still a friend to me today, mum and dad got killed in the local pub, the Thatched House in Essex Road. There was 22 people, I think it was, were killed in there. And I think that was the most horrendous night. Another night when a landmine landed in Britannia Row. And that blew all our windows in. But, of course, you know, bombing was going on all the time. And I think it was no great big deal at times. I think it was just something you accepted, you know. And, of course, we had a wonderful leader then, a man named Winston Churchill, who sort of wouldn't let us believe that we were going to lose the war. So, you know, he was the one, I think, who kept us going and sort of thought, well, you know, Hitler, you can't hurt me. I thought he was tremendous.
Would you actually listen to the speeches on the radio?
Very much so, yeah. He was very much... He was a real big cult figure, you know. I mean, everybody listened. If he was going to be on, you listened to him, you know. Because, he made wonderful speeches.
Now, what about... any military service? Were you expected to be called up when you were 18? Because that would be 1940.
No.
What happened about...
No, well, I was expected to be called up when I was 19, of which I was. I was called up in 1942.
About 19 and a half, yeah.
Yeah, 19 and a half, yeah, that's right.
Now, anything else happened before that, then? Anything you remember?
Yeah, I think the neighbourliness during this time was wonderful, really. Neighbours could never do enough for each other, and if you had a problem, I mean, there was always a helping hand. I mean, I think that was one of the great things that didn't happen so nice much after the war, and that doesn't really happen today.
And what sort of help would they give?
Well, if you didn't have any sugar or... if somebody was ill, they would pop in and look after them and keep an eye on them. If you didn't have any coal, you hadn't got any coal, as we used to have coal burning fires then, they would always bring round coal. Anything that way they could help you, they would do in them days.